So I changed the format a bit. I changed the title. I tried to make it a bit more broad to kind of give you an idea of what I have worked on. Thanks, Avery. So again, my name is Ari Dalakos, and I'm a finishing PhD student at Northwestern University. And today I will tell you a bit about my work on how I try to connect the large scales, the galaxy scales, surrounding a supermassive black hole. As the black hole is accreting this gas and forms accretion disks and jets, and how I follow these jets to large enough scale for long enough time to kind of close the feedback loop to see the effects of how these jets actually mess up the galactic medium. So I'm very used to all different kind of formats for a talk. So if you want, you can interrupt me at any moment. Feel free to ask me any question that's not clear. I won't mind that. And please let me know. I assume I have like 40 or 45 minutes. If you can tell me like 10 minutes in advance or 5 minutes in advance where I'm standing, so I know if I should rush or not, because I have a lot of stuff here. But anyway, let me start. So a big focus on my PhD has been to study jets. And in the community, jets, as I call them, cosmic fountains, they do happen to exist in many different systems. What I'm used to think about and work on is jets coming from supermassive black holes. These are huge black holes at the center of galaxies. Their mass can be from 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 10 solar masses. And here is an amazing image of Hercules A. You probably have seen this a million of times. But here, what we see is a jet coming right at the center of this galaxy and extends for hundreds of kiloparsecs of distances. So, something as small as a supermassive black hole at the center of this galaxy can create such huge structures that remain collimated and escape outside of the galaxy. Of course, we don't need supermassive black holes. You can have regular black holes coming from the death of stars. So let's talk about 10 tens of solar masses in mass. In this case, we have gamma ray bursts, which are coming from the collapse of huge, highly rotating stars that create a jet that penetrates the collapsing envelope of the star itself. And once it escapes, we can see the gamma ray burst. And of course, we have X-ray binaries. This image that shows here is Cygnus X1. You don't really see the jet here. It's filling up this low emission cavity, but you do see the effects of the jet as it rams through the interstellar medium and excavates a huge cavity and creates a Bose-Shock front, which kind of removes all the gas from the vicinity. You don't even need to have black holes at all. You can actually have, for example, a protostar, a newly formed star that kind of sheds the material from its accretion disk in itself and creates these beautiful images, which we have been seeing for some time now by JWST. And here is another image of a white dwarf in binaries, kind of the same idea as a black hole and its companion star. Instead of a black hole, you can have a white dwarf, and that can create jets as well. So of course, for the astrophotography lovers, these are very beautiful, majestic photographs, but do we actually care about the impact of the jets? And as it turns out, feedback from jets is actually very crucial. Here I'm showing two different galaxies. On the left, you have MS0735.6, blah, 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 telephone number. And here at the center, you have a humongous black hole, which has a mass of about 50 billion solar masses. And it creates these very large scale jets, which we show here by red. And red is basically radio emission, as the jets are emitting radio waves. And as it goes out, it kind of excavates these bubbles into the hot intercluster medium, and it shocks everything surrounding the galaxy itself. So the community has been thinking for some time now that the effects of these jets are sufficient to keep pumping energy and heating up the atmospheres of these galaxies, which can help explain why all this gas doesn't just lose its heat, condense and collapse on the galaxy and form stars. So the black hole here is regulating this, and the luminosity of the jet is kind of huge, 10 to the 46th Earth per second. On the other hand, we have M84, which not many people talk about, but cousin of M87. Here at the center, you have again the same story. You have a supermassive black hole with a size of about 1.5 billion solar masses. And the jets it creates are kind of smaller in size. They're about 2 kiloparsecs in length. But you can see that they do kind of the same thing. They go out into the galaxy and they heat up the intergalactic medium and they form this very hot X-ray emitting gas. So again, the jets can regulate the accretion of gas into the galaxy. And maybe you have heard this before, but people say even 1% of the resonance energy of a supermassive black hole, if it was extracted by the jets, this is more than enough energy to kind of unbind the whole galaxy itself. So this is really important to study feedback. Although it's really important to study the feedback, we still don't have any idea how exactly to extract information of the black hole properties near in the small scales of the galaxy. So because in most cases we cannot really resolve the scales, what we do is we usually study the jets in the large scales as they interact with the gas of the galaxy. Since the 1970s, we have a classification of radio galaxies. It's called the Fanaro-Friley classification. And broadly speaking, it comes into two categories. It comes into the FR1 classification. In this case, the jets are relativistic near the launch region. And as they go out into the galaxy, as you can see in this image here, they slowly slow down and they interact with the emitting medium. They grow unstable. And then they slowly diffuse into the surrounding medium until you're not able to see them anymore. So the brightest part of those jets are near the launching region, and further away, they're faint. Now, for the FR2, it's kind of the opposite. You have jets, very collimated, powerful jets coming from the center. And in most cases, you might not even be able to see the jets. What you see is once these jets collide with the emitting medium far away and they terminate, they create this very bright and luminous load. And this is the most bright region surrounding the emission. So these are kind of the opposite images. We don't really know what is happening. Is it possible that one of the jets is coming from a slower, slowly moving, slowly spinning black hole? Is it possible that in the first case, the emitting medium is more dense? There's a degeneracy here, and we cannot really understand if there is an inherent differences in the jets or the emitting medium. So to make things even worse, in the past decade, there's been a new round of observations and a new classification, which is called the FR0. And in these cases, these galaxies, the FR0 galaxies, they don't really show large-scale extended emission from jets. What we usually see is we see like a very unresolved bright radio core. Here is this image in radio at like 3 kiloparsecs, and if you zoom in about the factor of 1,000, you still don't really see any jets. You just see this load. And the community has been confused by this. Why? What is happening there? Is this an FR1 or an FR2 kind of starting to form? We don't really know. But what we do know is that these FR0 galaxies are at least 5 times more numerous than FR1s, which means that we have discovered a more prominent and abundant radio galaxy classification, and soon understand what it is. So question number one, is this coming from an evolution from the FR1 to FR2? Is this the natural conclusion? Once the black hole stops feeding, it kind of like the large scale jets die, and then any new accretion can reform stable jets, or is it a precursor? Then in the very few cases where you can see when you can see jets, you can resolve the jets, what we usually see is that they're very small in size, they're shortened in length, and you do see both of the components, which means that they're not moving very fast. They have a Lorentz factor less than 2. And because these galaxies kind of just exist in the inner scales of the galaxy, that's where they die. They're strongly coupled to the galaxy itself. So they don't do any feedback on the large scales of the galaxy and its atmosphere. They're doing the feedback within the galaxy itself. And last, about 2% of them are known to be gamma ray emitters. So there's definitely some dissipative processes in this jet that are more than enough to create gamma rays, and maybe even neutrinos, who knows. So, and the last kind of weird morphology I wanted to share with you is the so-called X-shaped radio galaxies. And these radio galaxies are about less than 10% of the brightest radio galaxies we see in the universe. And they usually look like this, where right at the center, you have a pair of jets propagating in one direction. And you can see the zoomed-in version here, the jet is going in this direction. But then if you kind of zoom out, you kind of see an extended emission that looked like a pair of jets that lived in the past and kind of propagated in a different direction. So the idea in the community is that two things might be happening. For the jet direction to change, you have to change the spin direction of the black hole via long-time accretion of the black hole, or maybe from mergers of supermassive black holes, or you can have maybe a warped and inclined disk that kind of like a jet goes in one direction, but over time is being shaped into a different direction. Or you can have asymmetries in the ambient medium. And as the jet is propagating into the ambient medium, these asymmetries kind of like interact with different sides of the jet and kind of create these large-scale wings, as they call them. Most of the cases, they don't really look like an X shape. This is kind of like a very broad classification. I would just call it a very weird X shape kind of morphology. You can see here many, many different scenarios. All of these jets look weird. In some cases, you can see an X shape. In others, you just see a blob. So I will touch upon how you can get a neck shape in a different way in this talk. So I hope I'm motivated that kind of trying to understand the jet on the large scales doesn't really give you all the information you want to know about what is happening near the black hole. So we're talking about a problem that has an immense scale separation issue. For example, for M87, everyone knows M87. Here is the optical image of M87. It has a diameter of about 100 kiloparsec in size. Then if you zoom in at the center, that's where you see this zoomed in window here. This is the jet coming from the black hole at the center of M87. And this jet is, it expands for like tens of kiloparsecs in size. And there is this region well within where the jet is coming from, which we call the Bondi radius. In this case, the Bondi radius is about 0.1 kiloparsec for M87. And very briefly, the Bondi radius just tells you the region within which the gravity of the black hole overcomes the collective gravity of the galaxy itself. And any gas that falls within this radius now just starts plummeting towards the black hole and it's going to be consumed by it. And of course, zoom in even more. We have the guest star. This is the supermassive black hole. You have probably seen this too many times. This image is coming from the AHC collaboration. This is a black hole. It has a size, the gravitational radius of this black hole is about 10 to the minus 6 kiloparsec. So if we try to understand how the gas of this whole galaxy kind of evolves dynamically and slowly gets to go close to the black hole, we're talking about a scale separation of 10 to the 8 orders of magnitude, which is really, really hard to do. And specifically about the M87, there's some very interesting facts about it. So as AHC is showing us, the most likely state within which the M87 black hole exists is what we call the magnetically arrested disk state. And this is where the black hole is accreting so much magnetic fields that now the magnetic fields are so dynamically important, they can start impeding with the accretion rate in the black hole, and they can suppress the mass accretion. And this is why it's really important to actually use theoremic system relations, since if magnetic fields can become so important, you have to use them and understand how you can get this jet from a mad system. Moreover, what we get from these observations is that it tells us that at most, 2% of the material, which is fed from the large scales, the Bondi scales, only 2% at most is consumed. 98% of the material has to be ejected. It doesn't reach the black hole itself. So the key question here is what physics dictates this 2%? Is it the jet feedback or is it just the disk wings just blowing away all the gas trying to fall from the large scale? So today I will show you how I started this journey of trying to connect the scales from the bonded scales down to the black holes and get this supersonic mass suppression and explain how you can get the steady state jet, how you can get the mass state self-consistently, and what does this mean for the future. And very briefly, this is really timely because there's going to be many future missions coming in the near future. We're going to have the new generation EHT and SKA. We're going to be able to start resolving jet formation near the black hole and jet propagation, and we can study their stability and how they interact with the ambient medium. We have the newly launched PRISM and Athena in the future, which is going to study at great resolution how the jet on the large scales on the atmospheres of the jets kind of induce turbulence and do feedback, which govern the galaxy dynamics. We have JWST now. We're gonna see early black hole growth in the universe, and somehow we see too many very massive black holes already formed too early in the universe. So we should try to understand how that happened. We're gonna have the LVK in the future LISA detecting gravitational waves from binary black holes and supermassive binary black holes, and of course the Ice Cube, which might start detecting more neutrinos coming from potentially jet dissipative regions. So this is truly a multi-messenger effort, which is going to be happening in the few years from now. So how I studied this problem was to kind of try to move away from this maybe setup everyone is very comfortable and used to, where you have a hydrostatic equilibrium torus around the black hole and you just let it accrete on the black hole. What I try to do here is to kind of relax this condition and use a more simple and controlled setup, which kind of looks like this. So you have the black hole at the center, which is spinning with some spin in this direction up. I'm placing a gas at the distance of the Bondi radius, which in this case, which I'm going to show you, is 1,000 gravitational radii. And the gas outside this Bondi radius is constant in density. Nothing very complicated. And of course, we need to have some magnetic fields that are going to be accreted along with the gas to form the jets. So you can place some vertical magnetic fields here, which I'm showing with this orange yellow color, BZ. And in principle, any gas you're accreting will have some degree of rotation. So I also can choose some angular momentum profile of this gas distribution outside. In this case, the angular velocity here is going in on the right side and it's coming up. So the angular momentum in this case, which I'm drawing here, will be parallel to the spin of the black hole. So what I expected here, the first time I ran the simulation, is that the gas will start collapsing. It will drag the magnetic fields with it. And once the rotation kind of hits the centrifugal barrier and becomes a Keplerian disk, that's where the disk is going to form. And this disk is going to be perpendicular to the spin of the black hole. So I expected eventually to get a jet that will go up and down. So let's see what we get. The blue color in the simulation will be low density gas, and the red will be high density. So the gas collapses from the Bondi radius, just free falls, reaches the black hole. You have this yellow colored accretion disk here at the center, and you will see now that the first jets formed are actually going left and right. So they're going 90 degrees misaligned with the expected direction of the black hole spin. And you can see how these jets are kind of intermittent. They're going in and out of the plane of this video, and they're breaking apart and inflating these cocoons. Eventually, once enough magnetic fields accumulate in the black hole, that's when the jets have enough power now to kind of blow away all this infalling gas, and they actually go in the expected direction. And now I'm kind of like zooming out, and I'm also rotating a bit the image, so you can see kind of this very complicated morphology happening in this simulation. So this was really surprising to us because, first of all, why did the jet go 90 degrees misaligned initially? And how did it become stable in the end? So just by looking at this image here, if you were to glimpse this accretion process in real life, this would take actually many, many years. So what you would happen to see is something that like looks like a neck-shaped jet morphology. So this was really surprising to us. And we actually also made some synthetic X-ray mock images of this egg-shaped galaxy, which is the one on the right. You can see here the Baoshoe, which is very bright in yellow, so high X-ray emission coming from the short compressed gas in Bremsstrahlung. And you can see these cavities in black, which is actually the jets and the lobes, which are filled with radio-emitting gas. And here on the left, we see a real observation from this paper, Oberdossi et al. 2022, which is another egg-shaped morphology galaxy, where you can see kind of very similar characteristics to what we see here. You see the Baoshoe of this newly formed jet, and you also see hints of a previous jet activity almost 90 degrees misaligned with the current one. So the idea here is that, of course, this was all happening in the early transient phase of the simulation. The system hasn't really settled yet to what it wants to be in. However, this simulation was super long. It took like 2 10 to the 5 dynamical timescales, and half of that was in the X-shaped state. So and this is kind of like at least 10 times longer than most of the simulations ever performed. So if you don't really run the simulation for long enough, you will not be able to see a steady state forming. And interestingly, here is the bounded radius for reference. If you measure at the steady state what is the mass accretion on the black hole and compare this with the analytic Bondi rate accretion, what one can see is that it's at 2% of the Bondi accretion rate. So, like us, we actually kind of not consistently got this 2% accretion rate compared to the Bondi rate, which is what actually agrees with the upper limit from the HT collaboration. And here, what we see is that for the steady state to come into play, the system has to become mud. Because if it doesn't become mud and it doesn't have enough magnetic field, the jets cannot just push away through all the infalling gas and just go in the direction it wants to go. Of course, we can also measure the outflow efficiency, basically compare how much energy is extracted by the black hole versus how much is being accreted on the black hole. And we find that it's about 150%. So it's more than 100%. And this is not really surprising for highly spinning black holes. In this simulation, the black hole was spinning with a spin parameter of 0.94. So more energy is extracted from the black hole than is being fed on the black hole. And we can also measure what is the energy of the jets, and we find it's something like 10 to the 44 erg per second, which is also within the limits of what we know for M87. So before I move on, is there any question about this?
Yeah, maybe I can ask about this jet. Do you actually use it like directly by the direction of the magnetic field, or
sorry, what is the question? I cannot hear you very well.
Like how? Like I want to understand the direction of the jet, right? Is it along the magnetic field direction, or?
Yes. So in this scenario, the magnetic fields were vertical, which means that once this would form, they would have a large scale colloidal field in the accretion disk. So once this colloidal field would fall on the black hole ergosphere, it will start being torqued up by the spin and create the jets. So eventually the jets, once they're being launched and they go in the direction of the black hole spin and the angular momentum of the disk, it is also aligned with the magnetic fields, the initial magnetic fields in the emitting gas.
So during this whole process, the spin direction of the black hole does not change in your simulation, right? It is only the disk. It is the disk that's changing and the magnetic field direction is changing. So you get the precessing jet. Is that right?
Yes. So the jet is precessing and the accretion disk is precessing. So if you see the accretion disk here, it's almost misaligned 90 degrees and it's doing a wobble. And once it just go out in this direction, you can see it kind of follows the precession of the disk itself. So the spin, as you asked, the spin is not changing. For these time scales, even though this is an extremely long simulation, you need to accrete a lot of gas. You need to accrete at least like maybe let's say 10% during the mud state of your initial mass of the black hole to change your spin on the black hole. So here the spin in these simulations wouldn't change. It would be in the same direction with the same magnitude.
Okay, thanks.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So I have a few questions. So going back to your initial conditions, so you prescribe an angular momentum for the whole gas. So basically, you're
Yes.
stuck with uniform gas everywhere, rotating in some direction, right?
Correct.
Okay. Good. And my question here is like you're assuming a very large scale magnetic field, right? So is that something that you would expect, or you're basically saying, okay, after some dynamo process or whatever, you will get this because you're starting with a huge scale magnetic field. So of course you get a jet,
Yes.
and it's very nice that you see this propagation stuff consistently, but still, right? Like the I'm worried about this assumption of the large scale structure of the magnetic field.
Yes, I mean that's a really fair point. So this was data point number one. So it was the first simulation done like this. So what we chose would be to have large scale colloidal fields to give the best case scenario for the jets to form. But this setup has also been explored concurrently. Like in 2021, there's been some work done by Sean Ressler, where he has done basically kind of the same idea, but the Bondi scale separation is 100 RGM, so it's 10 times smaller. And these simulations run maybe like up to 10, like a few 10 to the 4 RG over C, which is at least 10 times shorter. And in his study, what he varied is didn't vary anything. He varied just the misalignment of the magnetic field direction with the spin of the black hole. So he had a case where there was a 90 degrees misalignment. So you would call this probably toroidal field. So basically, the magnetic field would go in the same direction as, let's say, the rotation here. So once this formed, you would actually get a toroidally dominated accretion disk. And even in this case, you would eventually form some large-scale field loops of colloidal fields that would fall on the black hole and it would create jets. Of course, then you're starting kind of like having more variability because the loops can actually have different polarization, sorry, different polarity, and they can cancel the flux on the black hole and then the jets die. But he showed that even in this setup, you can get a large-scale jet, although it was a smaller scale separation, even if the magnetic field was actually misaligned.
Right.
And another point of your question was, and I'll be very brief, would you expect to have large scale colloidal fields? I don't know. So this kind of setup here wouldn't be able to mimic exactly the, for example, the nice spiral galaxy we have, which most of the gas is very rotationally supported. In that case, I would expect most of the field will be toroidal, because in order for all the gas to kind of fall from this galactic disk down to the black hole, it will mostly be rotationally supported. But for example, an elliptical galaxy, it's not clear to me. You can have kind of like a more random accretion, more spherically symmetric. And in that case, you can expect, in my view, to have some form of large scale fields at some accretion episode falling on the black hole. And then the question is, how would that look like?
Sorry, one more question before you move on. Have you measured or explored the properties of the disk that you get from self-consistently starting with this initial conditions, like the angular momentum profile and all that? Is it similar to what you get if you start with like Fishman-Moncrief initial data where you have a torus already there, and is it similar or is it different?
So I haven't explored all of the properties. Somebody might be interested in that. It definitely doesn't look like a Moncrief fishbone torus. So I don't want to go into this exactly, but for this specific case, the circularization radius I chose for this setup is 30 gravitational radii. So the disk falls radially inward. Once it hits this distance of 30, that's where the disk forms, and you have a disk of about 30 RG inside. However, since I ran this for very long, and the disk system turns mud and is a very long-lasting mud state, if I measure the rotational profile of this disk, for example, the angular momentum, what I find is subkeplerian disk with like 40 to 50% the Keplerian angular velocity, and it doesn't even end where the disk you would expect the disk to end at 30 RG. It actually, this extends all the way to 300 and 400 RG. And that's because the gas in this setup is continuously trying to fall on the black hole and replenish the gas.
Yeah.
But the mud controls the accretion rate. So what happens is that there's a continuously like MRI process, magnetic rotation instability, you still have transfer of angular momentum outwards, and you kind of create a larger and larger disk that's very subcapillarian. So I would say this looks very different from a monkey fishback torus.
I see. Very interesting. Thank you.
And I think I should move on, but this is a very good segue to what I want to discuss next, which is kind of take the same simulation and actually have no angular momentum in the ambient medium. And why would I be crazy enough to kind of try this? That's because, again, there has been a lot of studies from Ressler 2021 and Kwan 2022, where they studied a very similar setup as I have done. Albeit for Ressler, it was a much smaller Bondi radius, and for Kwan, it was infinity. So it was kind of like a large-scale flow falling from infinity, but without any angular momentum in the gas itself. But the black holes were spinning. So the results from both of these works is that in this case, where you don't have an accretion disk, you have a very hard time reaching the mud state. And when you get jets, which are large enough to propagate for more, let's say, 100 or 200 RG in distance, these jets should be unstable once they go past 800 RG in distance. And they should be unstable due to the magnetic kinking stability that takes a straight jet, it makes it into a helix and breaks it apart. So the green prediction from Ressler was that it's really, really hard to get a jet past 800 RG. So how the hell do we get all these jets that reach, megaparsecs of distances? So I tried the same setup as before I show you, but in this case, there's no angular momentum in the gas. With red, I will show here in this 3D movie, the low density, and the blue will be the high density. So same as before, you have the gas collapsing. It creates this overdense blob. You don't have an accretion disk. But since you don't have an accretion disk, all these magnetic fields fall on the black hole, and the system turns mud immediately. And it creates these large-scale jets that initially are stable. They go past the 1,000 RG distance of which is the Bondi radius, and they inflate the cavities. But as you probably saw, these jets promptly became very unstable and globally fell apart. I will play the movie one more time. Here are the mud-stable jets. They go out in one direction, same as the spin of the black hole. And at this point, the jets turn into a twisted, they have a twisted morphology and they break apart. And any new jet being ejected at the late stages, it's intermittent and it's misaligned from the black hole spin, and it doesn't surpass the Bondi radius intact. It breaks apart before surpassing it. So let's see what happened. So the good news is that you can get a jet when you don't have any angular momentum. Here I'm showing two projections in the y and x direction along the distance of the jet. The color is the proper velocity of the jet. With yellow, it's very high, and black is very low. So you can see the jets are mostly straight, and they kink very far away beyond the Bondi radius. And at some point, you see how they start getting twisted more and more and more, and they globally fall apart. So the surprising thing here is that we actually saw and we studied the kinking stability in this system. And you can see that the jets are very stable within 1,000 RG, and they only become kinking stable during the mud state at 1,500 and 2,000, and they fall apart at the end. At this point, though, you see something dramatic happens, and the jets kind of change their behavior and fall apart. So what we actually saw is that just by doing the linear stability analysis that most people in the community use to understand if a jet should become kink unstable, this criterion doesn't really take into account nonlinear effects in the jet propagation. So what happens here is that, I will talk about this next, but you can see there's large bends happening near the black hole, and these large bends are nonlinear seeds that feed the kink instability, and more specifically, the external kink instability. So you can imagine this as having a whip, and you start like jerking the end of the rope, let's say, and you create a wiggle, and this wiggle starts propagating along the rope, And in this case, this wiggle grows more and more until it breaks apart the whole jet. And this is really interesting to study by itself because this extreme external kink instability destroying the jets actually dissipates most of the magnetic energy that is existent inside of the jets. And it will be very interesting to study this in connection to non-thermal particle acceleration and even high, ultra high energy cosmic rays and neutrinos. And here I'm showing just the breadth of different instabilities you can find in a single snapshot, where here I'm showing the entropy of in the jet with magnetization. And you can see how the jet starts out very cold. And then you have these instabilities and recollimation points at the edge as the jet interacts with the ambient medium. And it starts heating up the jet at the outside, and then eventually even the core of the jet in the center, you can see how the kink instability starts growing and becomes nonlinear and breaks the jet apart. And the last point here I want to show you is that although this system became mud and it was steady state for a very long time in this quasi steady state in the mud state, you can see how the jets are actually changing direction all the time. So you would probably see these jets as wobbly jets. And I'm contrasting this with the recent work by Kui et al. 2023, where they studied M87 in a span of like 22 years. And they found that the direction of the jet at scales of like 600 to 3000 RG actually changes by a few degrees every year. And what they said is that maybe this is a hint that you have a lens-steering inner disk precession, and you have a jet that is actually wobbling. But what I'm trying to show here is that when you have a mud state, the jet will be inherently wobbly, and it will change directions, and this change in directions will actually propagate at larger distances. And you don't necessarily need an accretion disk that wobbles to explain this. So going back into this simulation and going more into the details, we actually found three different accretion states. First, as I said, the system becomes mud. Here is a 3D image of the system where the jet is in purple and the accretion disk that forms is in orange. And it might be surprising that we actually have an accretion disk here because I had no angular momentum in the gas. However, because the black hole is maximally rotating and you have a large-scale colloidal field, what we think is happening is that this the frame dragging itself starts acting on this large-scale magnetic fields, and it efficiently torques the gas, and the gas kind of starts co-rotating with the black hole, and it forms an accretion disk that's about like 40 RG in size. Again, measuring the m dot on the black hole, we find that it's 2% of the Bondi accretion rate. So this is surprising because compared to the simulation before, where we had a larger disk and stronger winds, these winds didn't do anything. Most of the suppression of the mass accretion on the black hole was done by the jets, which implies what that in the mud system, the jets do most of the feedback and not any disk winds. So the long-term effect of these jets, once they surpass the boundary radius, they start creating turbulence. They start affecting the pristine initial conditions of my system, and this random angular momentum will eventually fall down on the black hole, fall on this accretion disk, and start eating the angular momentum, the coherent angular momentum from outside in. And what I see is that the mud state eventually disappears, and the system becomes barely an accretion disk, which I call the bad state. And in this state, you actually have a mini disk of about 10 RG in size. And this disk doesn't have strong enough winds to kind of like coat the jet from the infalling gas as a cushion. So basically, you minimize the disk, the mass accretion on the black hole increases from 5 to maybe even 10% of the Bondi rate. And this increase of mass now starts hitting your jet very near the black hole. And this is what creates the wiggles, the speeds from what you saw in the movie before, that creates the twists that propagate far along the jet and create the external kink criterion that disrupts the jet of the jets and they fall apart. And after the large scale jets fall apart, Then the system now enters a completely different state where it continuously accretes random angular momentum gas. And it does create momentarily some accretion disks. And it does feed the black hole some magnetic flux. So you do get jets. But as the random angular momentum accumulates, your disk starts precessing. And as the disk starts precessing, it starts precessing the jet itself. And we see huge and extreme bends happening in the jet. And this is how these newly formed jets actually fall apart without ever having the chance to move past the boundary radius. I named this accretion state the rocking accretion disk because this disk can actually even flip 180 degrees and 90 degrees all the time. And the jets, even though they're weaker, about a factor of 15 compared to the stronger mud jets, there are moments where the mass accretion rate on the black hole actually falls down to 2% again of the Bondi rate. And that is because even though your jets are weaker, now they're accessing a larger solid angle in the sky and they do a very strong coupling and feedback. So even though you wouldn't be able to see these jets from far away if it's unresolved, they're still very important in regulating the mass accretion on the black hole. And the very interesting part here, where the light bulb went on, is to kind of ask, hey, can this actually be a very good candidate for the FR0 sources, which I talked with, discussed before? And why? Because in most cases for the FR0 sources, you don't really see any large-scale jets. You just see jet emission coming from the core of the galaxy. And going back to what I said about 2% of these FR0s being gamma ray emitters, now we're trying to understand if maybe these 2% of the FR0s are coming from this disintegration of this large-scale jet. So this is a radio mock-up image of what would the synchrotron radiation would be from this system. Here on the left, we see the mud jets propagating misaligned at 90 degrees. So the relativistic jet is actually Doppler deboosted, and you don't really see the emission from it. What you see is a termination cocoon, the shocks, and the emission from these globes. Then, once you go from the mud to the bud state and the jet becomes globally unstable to the kink, now these wiggles here, where the kink instability grows and dissipates magnetic energy, starts flaring up along the hull of the jet. And then, before it falls apart, you actually see a flare of radio emission coming from these sources. So maybe this subset of FR0s can actually be a real transition from a, you know, a misaligned jet that moves slowly and then becomes unstable at its base and it falls apart. Okay, so I'm not sure how much time I have, probably like 15 minutes.
Maybe I ask a question. Are you saying that
Yes.
the system will evolve from this mad state first to a bad state and then to a rad state? Or
Yes, the understanding is this. So basically, the bad state is just kind of a subset of the rad, which kind of tells you if you had large-scale jets, once you start messing the jet propagation at its base, and you just, let's say, you kill it, you kill the jet at its base, and you just let it go and propagate, now this jet will actually become, it will lose its energy supply, and it will become extremely kink and stable. And even more so if the jet before it disrupts at the base starts wobbling very violently and creates large-scale wiggles, because this wiggle will propagate in the jet and accelerate its kink instability.
So I guess I'm a bit confused about this delta t, right? So what's the meaning of delta t? So delta t is 10 to the 4 means this bad state appear first and then this.
Yes, so this is the duration where I'm showing how long each state lasted. The mass states like last like 3.5 10 to the 4 are G over C. So the simulation ran for like something like 14 times 10 to the 4 are G over C. So like something 1.5 10 to the 5. So my point here would be that the rad state is actually not that short-lived. You can actually have a long-lived rad state where it's comparable to the mud state. And the bud state is actually the shortest of them all. It doesn't take much to kind of destroy the jet and then go to the rad state. And actually, I will share this in the next slide. But yes, another question?
So this is all for the zero angular momentum initial state, right?
Zero angular momentum of the gas, not the black hole. The black hole is 0.94.
Right, and so when you imbue the initial conditions with angular momentum and a uniform field, then you were in the mad state for the whole time, essentially.
Spoiler. I will discuss it on the next slide.
So, and you have about 10 minutes.
Okay, I will actually start accelerating. So again, the question that you kind of alluded to here is that, okay, maybe you just picked up a very weird scenario where you have exactly zero angular momentum in the gas, which is unphysical. It won't happen. What would happen if you actually had some angular momentum, like the previous simulation I showed you? So again, this is m dot over m dot bonded versus time. Right about here at 3 × 10⁴ out to 6 × 10⁴, this is where the mad state is. And the system looks like this. And then eventually the system goes haywire. It goes into the rad state here. And I'm showing rad state here where the mass suppression is again at 2%. However, if I were to run something with some angular momentum, so there was some angular momentum outside the bondi radius, would the jet be able to induce enough turbulence to kind of mess with that angular momentum? So I went back in the previous run with the angular momentum, and I ran it for much, much longer. So this is the duration of that run, for example. It runs for like 1.5 × 10⁶ RG over C now. So even like 10 times longer than the one I did before. And at some point, you can see how the mass accretion from mad state, it actually jumps up and it enters the rad state. So basically what I saw is that if you have some angular momentum in the ambient gas to begin with, you have to simulate this setup for much, much longer to see the effect of the jet feedback. You need enough to give the jet enough time to kind of do its feedback and mess with the angular momentum. So it kind of alludes to the simple idea that if you have more and more angular momentum in the ambient gas, you have to wait for longer and longer for the jets to kind of switch off and go from the mud to the rad state. Does this answer the question you had before?
Yeah. But there's an associated question is, you started off in this very idealized, I don't know if it's an isothermal sphere or something like this, right? Some large scale gas mm-hmm. distribution that immediately collapses. So mm-hmm. what is that medium doing during this evolution? Is this a transition really in the jet, or is this a transition in the ambient medium? How does that relate to when you go from bad to bad, et cetera?
So yeah, this is a good question because the gas initially has no infalling velocity. It's just basically zero velocity outside the bondi radius, and then I'm just letting it collapse and wait for long enough to kind of reach, for example, the state it wants to be, the bonded solution. So when I tested this without any magnetic fields and without any rotation, so purely hydro, the system very quickly goes into the steady state bonded solution. But even if the gas at the bondi radius, once it collapses, and creates a rarefaction wave, a shock wave, it does start changing the properties of the gas at that distance. However, the time scales for this change is a few times the freefall time scale or the bondy time scale. And for example, in this scenario, this time scale is about 2 or 3 × 10⁴. However, once the inner gas collapses in the black hole, you form a disk very quickly, and the jets that form, they propagate like from zero to the bondi radius very fast. So the bow shock and all the different like feedback effects that the jet introduces to the out like damping medium actually are more important, and they happen at much shorter time scales compared to the hydro effects of the ambient medium. Does this answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. But it's interesting that you said that the free fall time is a few times 10⁴, and you see the transition from the mad to the bad state for the zero angular momentum case around that time. You see the jets start to break up.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, I wonder is the evolution of the kink instability driven by the jet, or is it driven by the atmosphere that it's propagating through? And I understand that maybe that becomes all mixed up because what you said.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So I'm not sure. This has been a nightmare for months in this paper. I could not understand what caused the kink to happen. Was it like the jet kind of like it stopped moving at the head and it couldn't propagate through the constant ambient medium anymore? And maybe the kink propagated backwards. And like basically what caused the kink? Was it the ambient medium or something at the base of the jet? And the final conclusion to what we see is that at least here, if you play the movie, if you instead of doing the linear analysis and doing the global stability parameter that tells you that from mad to bad, the jet shouldn't fall apart, if you just study the local stability to the kink, even though you can study this in regions where it's non-linear, it can still tell you that at that part, the jet should be very kink and stable. So what we found is that by doing the linear analysis throughout the whole jet, throughout different times, at the late stage where these large bends are happening, these bends themselves are very unstable to the kink. And because the fluid in the jet is actually co-moving and it's propagating, this instability is just co-moving with the jet. So the source of the extreme instability is happening at the base of the jet, not by the ambient medium. But at the large scales where you see these bends happening, this might be either happening from the internal kink, or it might be happening from from vorticity induced by the ambient medium and the cones of the jet. And that is not very easy to understand. Does that make some sense?
Insofar as it makes sense, yes.
Okay, I can spend some time later. Once we're done, I can still chat if you want. But I think I should slowly wrap up. Yeah, I will probably have to go very fast. So one claim I made before is you might ask why 2% of the Bondi radius? Why without angular momentum or angular momentum when the system is mad? Why do you get 2%? And in this, the upper image what I show is three different plots. The black one is all of them have a Bondi radius of 1,000 RG, but each one of them has a different angular momentum in the initial ambient gas. So the black line is the one where I have zero angular momentum. The purple one is the one I have angular momentum that circularizes the into a disk at 30 RG, and the orange line is the one that circularizes at 120 RG, so four times larger than the 30. And comparing, for example, the orange and the purple, once these reach into a steady state and they become mud, it's independent of the angular momentum reservoir in the disk. They both saturate around 2%. And the black curve, which is the non-angular momentum, at this point here is when it becomes mud. It goes down to about 1-2%. But then eventually it goes very fast into the rad state. So it doesn't really make sense to kind of like think of it as a steady state. But if it were in a steady state in the mud, it would have the same accretion rate. So what we find here is that when the system is mud, it's independent of the angular momentum inside of the disk and its size. It wants to kind of saturate at the same level. And then the other question is like, okay, what if I keep the angular momentum constant to circularize at 30 RG, but then I vary the size of the Bondi radius? And by doing this, this purple line is Bondi radius of 100, the blue one is the 300, and the green one is 1,000. So you can see once the systems become mud and they turn steady state, you can see they actually suppress more and more the larger the Bondi radius is. So this is great because we can actually extrapolate this behavior to the realistic Bondi scales, which is 10 to the 5 or 10 to the 6, as for example for real M87, right? So we can find this scaling of m dot on the black hole versus m dot Bondi, and we find that it scales with a Bondi radius to the power of 0.5, minus 0.5, or minus 0.7. So that would tell us that if the Bondi radius of the system was 10 to the 5, which is close to the what M87 is, instead of 2%, it should be 0.2%. of the ambient bond here, which again agrees with the lower limit of what we see from EHT. So this is really, really, we're really happy with this model. And you know, what we see here is that you actually have to run this for extremely long time scales to kind of see the system settling in something that looks like a steady state. But then if you run this for very long, sufficiently long, you can actually close the feedback loop and see the effects that the jet have into the ambient medium. And what this affects, how the jets affect the ambient medium, they try to create turbulence and random angular momentum. And then once you wait for long enough, this angular momentum will accrete on the black hole and starts creating all these weird effects. So I don't have any time to talk about different spins or 384. But what I will briefly say that this setup, it might not be good for you know, a spiral galaxy, but it might actually be a great idea if you want to study stellar mass black holes embedded in AGN disks. Because a stellar mass black hole of a size of 10 or 100 stellar masses in the AGN disk, it will start accreting material from its boundary sphere within this thick accretion disk, and it will look like a boundary accretion setup. And a very simple estimation of what the m dot on the black hole would be is that it's at least, it's more than 10 to the 6 m dot eddy. And this is huge. This means if you naively think, okay, this black hole will accrete this for as long as they want, that would imply that in most AGNs, you should expect, you know, at least a binary supermassive black hole in every AGN. But this is not the case. So this setup is very ripe for the taking, and maybe what I'm doing currently is to kind of use this to try to understand how crucial is the mechanical feedback from these jets, and eventually also include radiation and see how the radiation can actually help suppress the mass accretion of the black hole. I don't have time for this, so I will just leave you with the slides, and I will take any other questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you. So we got a number of questions during the presentation, but let me throw it to our online participants. Are there any questions from the Zoom crowd?
I have one more. If there is no one else, good questions. Yeah. So maybe it's a technical question, but I'm not an expert on this. So. Once you form a jet, you basically, the magnetization of the jet is limited by what you put as floor in the simulation, right? You have
Correct.
Like up
yes.
on sigma. Mm-hmm. I guess you're using around sigma around 10, 100, around that,
yeah, like
right?
Something like 20, yes.
Yeah. So my question is, do you know, I'm sure people already studied this, but I don't know the answer. What is the effect of this flooring or the basically the kappa and sigma on the instabilities that you see? Because in principle, you know, you have this basically in the force-free regime, right? And so because you're seeing, you know, instabilities related to how basically the medium is interacting with this magnetized outflow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my question is this dependent on the floor?
Part of it is dependent on the floor, and it's actually something I'm working on right now. Is for example, if I had this problem and I just put 15 or 20 magnetization as a floor, I had 100. So what goes inside the kink instability? Let's see here. So the kink instability, what you should care about in the kink instability is basically what is the proper velocity of the jet. And you kind of like you have some Doppler boosting happening. But you have to think of the kink instability as a ratio of two timescales. In the numerator, you have the timescale it takes for an alpha wave to go around the periphery of the jet core. And you compare this timescale with the propagation timescale of the jet. So what goes inside of this timescale is actually the proper velocity of the jet and the alpha speed and the distance, right? So the Alston speed here, even if my magnetization is not too high, is always about one within the jet. But the proper velocity here, the question is like, how large can it get? Because you can think of it, if you had more magnetization, you can spend more magnetization to kind of like dissipate the magnetic energy into kinetic energy. So this is something we are trying to understand, like, would it actually affect the velocity by that much? But here, the idea is that also you have to remember your jet is embedded into an infalling gas, so it's very collimated. Some preliminary results I have is that the magnetization doesn't really drop that much as it should, because the velocity of the jet is actually being capped by its collimation. Once you're within this dense medium, you're collimating your jet and you don't allow it to accelerate much. So your proper velocity doesn't really change by that. And you're wasting magnetization into internal energy. That's how you get this red kind of like hotspots evolving inside the jet. You create a hot jet, but the velocity here doesn't change. So I wouldn't expect the magnetization to change much the location where the kink is happening. This is, I think, more governed by the ambient gas jet interaction. But it would definitely change any non-thermal emission and particle acceleration in these jets. Does this make sense?
Yes. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But you know, but we might have something fairly soon about that. So, you know.
Nice. Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Let me throw the last question to the room, because we're running a little bit late. Is there anybody who wants to ask a question?
I think somebody raised their hand on Zoom.
On Zoom, but let's see, is there anybody in the room who wants to ask a question? All right, so last question goes to Alexandra, and then we'll finish things off. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Hey, thanks. Great talk. This is really fun. I just have kind of a quick one, and this is like with the last slides then. And so then if I'm just kind of visualizing this like for a galaxy size interaction, kind of the very end, I'm trying to just kind of embed a sea of these type of interactions, and we see them all kind of looking to like rad or in the rad bad transition. Could you imagine like then having like small galaxies in some ways being ejected out of larger galaxies in some type of cohesive flaring where you're getting a lot of side lateral action on gas flows, and then maybe there's some like cohesive jet action that's happening on the BZ collimation and the galactic ambient magnetic fields? Is that a sensible question?
Yeah, so I didn't understand two things. So isn't the last slide you wanted to talk? Which one was the last slide?
Well, I'm just more talking about, like, we've been talking about this at internal versus external energy, and I was wondering if we tried to do some like large body simulation of black holes where they're all going through these type of phase transitions, if you could get some type of like cumulative virial behavior where you're saying like in some ways their ambient magnetic fields are all being turned on and off into the collimation stages and like little regions because of the transitions in between the bad and good phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would be really exciting, kind of like to connect more the inner kind of dynamics to the large scale effects and kind of like maybe statistics of these systems. What this work, so first of all, these simulations are kind of like, you know, they're hard to run, they take a lot of time. So it's kind of like we're still kind of like limited by, you know, our numerics. So we're still kind of like thinking of having more realistic Bondi radius, for example, of 10 to the 5. And through different tricks, which I don't have time to discuss, kind of like, you know, resolve this whole accretion and then jet kind of like forming and then reaching out to the large scales where the galaxy is being affected by this. I don't have an answer, I think, for this large scale kind of effect. I think to see such effects, you need to run the simulations for a long time. As we said, like to see if it's virialized, how the behavior of the ambient medium changes, if I understand correctly, based on the different states. I think it would be really, really interesting to study. And maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be in GRMHT. You can actually, you know, if I can understand, for example, the time scale at which you have a transition from a mad to rad state, based on what is the angular momentum of the accreting gas, then this could be actually used in, for example, large-scale hydro simulation of jets. And then this could be kind of like a subgrid modeling. You know, this jet will like be in the mud for this amount of time, and then it will have to turn off, and then you have the rad state. I don't know if
Yeah.
that's something you asked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then you can just put like any type of like whatever particle interactions you're putting on the dense, like the intermedium, like you could go fancy from there on the particle spectrum. Yeah.
This can go in all different directions. And again, this result for the rat kind of like results from, it was published. It will be published soon, but it's accepted already. On archive, it was in like late October. So we're still pretty early on this side. But this is a very exciting kind of direction to kind of, connect the inner side dynamics of the cushion disk to the large scale observables.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. It's really great. Thank you.
All righty. So with that, considering time, let's thank Aris again. It was a wonderful talk.